Modern Casserole is a podcast of three hungry women. We met working at a food magazine, and each week we talk about food, culture, what we cooked, and what we ate in San Diego and beyond. I'm Olivia, and this is Modern Casserole. How are you guys doing this week?
It's been a hard week, right? I think I can start by just saying that's, you know, all I feel confident in processing.
Absolutely. Yeah, it has been a hard week. And across the whole country, across the world, and specifically in San Diego, you know, we're seeing things right here at our doorstep being addressed. And there's been some really amazing kind of progress going on this week at like legislation levels and everything. And I think we're all processing it and keeping our eyes out. Felicia, how have you been doing through this week?
It's tough to see where we're at as a country, but I'm also really hopeful that with so many of these injustices coming to light and all the protests, that there might actually be the potential for a change. And for me, I'm looking for ways that I can help support the Black community here in America.
Right. I totally agree. And something we've talked about before has been, you know, the power of, where we go when we eat out. And Gabby Beckford of PaxLight.com, which is a travel and lifestyle blog, put together a list at the end of last year of over 20 Black-owned eateries to patron to support the culture and community. And it's a really great list. She's got a lot of great detail and information about these businesses and photos and things like that on the website. And we'll also, of course, include a link to her website in our show notes. But I took a look at the list, and I can't wait to try more of these places. Some of them were on my radar, some of them were not, and I'm really just excited to explore that list further. But one that popped out that I've been to has, and that I really, really love, is Flavors of East Africa. So I'm looking forward to returning there and trying some more spots. So I wanted to throw it to you girls and see if you guys had any spots that you wanted to call out from the list.
Flavors of East Africa is actually one of my favorites too. It's one of the only places where I've found some foods that are a little bit similar to the foods that I wrote about in Oman. Because in Oman, there's all these influences from Zanzibar, because they were actually the same country up until 1965. And Flavors of East Africa has some of those same dishes, which are these really lovely curries that take influences from South Asia, and coconut milk, and those wonderful little sambusas, which are kind of like samosas, but thinner and filled with meat often, and spinach and all kinds of good stuff. I love that one.
Wow, that sounds great. Actually, did you say sambusas?
Mm-hmm.
Because there's another dish that it's another Middle Eastern thing called sambusak. And it's kind of similar because it's like a filled pastry. And so now I realize that's like probably a North African or East African influence also in that part of Middle Eastern cooking. So that's really interesting.
I tried to kind of track the progression of the sambusak, the sambusa, and the samosa. And it's very difficult to figure out. It's like a chicken and an egg situation, mm-hmm. because of the trade routes and how many of those flavors and dishes were shared between, you know, India, the Middle East, and Africa. So they are all related. I like to think of them as
That's
like
amazing.
Savory cousin pastries.
Yeah.
Little pockets of flavor.
And then, exactly. Of course, the hot pocket.
I mean, naturally.
Oh, God.
Naturally, we ended up here in America with the hot pocket. Yes.
Oh, hot pockets. It's a blended food story, isn't
For
it?
For sure.
I mean, that's not the great thing about food, though, the way that it does travel and change, and it kind of tells the story of all the people who have had influences on different places and mm-hmm. on different cultures. And that, I guess, one of the things we've been running into a lot lately, even before all of the intensity of this week, there was the drama with Alison Roman a couple weeks ago, where people were calling her out quite a bit. And I thought a lot about that, because one of the great things about food is the way that we can borrow from different cultures, and it's a way of sharing our culture and connecting. So where is the line between appropriation and celebration? And I think a big part of it is acknowledging where our food comes from and what those influences are. And you know, one of the big criticisms with her was calling it, you know, these definitive names, the chickpea stew, the this, the that, and not really giving credit where credit was due. And so that's something that I like to think about a lot as you know, a cook and as a food writer. And I know both
Absolutely.
of you are really good about that too.
That's, I think, the thing that most captures me about food and cuisine and traveling is kind of tracing how it all plays out together. Because we talked about it last week with the pizza and thinking about, you know, where it started and then the ingredients. Even though we think it's Italian, there's all these influences that you cannot deny of, you know, that speak to the history of that place and of those people and those ingredients. And I think it always just makes a much bigger conversation than just like, oh, that pizza was yummy. It's like, okay, but you know, think about like all those kind of intricacies behind it. I think that's really,
And
really
sometimes
fascinating.
it gets criticized as bastardization,
Right,
and
or
you know,
inauthentic.
and
Right.
I can experience this with kimchi personally. You know, that's about the only thing I can relate to. And sometimes you know, there's like a tinge of oh, why are you doing that, white guy to the kimchi? I don't know how else to say it any more diplomatically. But I've also seen other people aware of that in the media who are actually full Korean, you know, responding to that. And, you know, so at some point you just kind of have to find it laughable and then think like what, you know, what a great thing it is that we're able to take these things and share it with more people and experience more, pleasure from what we eat. And I don't know.
Well, I'd love
Absolutely.
actually to hear more about that from you. As a Korean American, what is the difference? Like when you see, I mean, I won't name names, but some people do, like the kimchi tacos, and that I think you've mentioned before that you really liked those. And then there's other people who are making kimchi and putting it on their menus, and it is a little bit more ick. And have you been able to kind of put your finger on what the ick factor is?
No, and you know, I think sometimes I tend to be like a happy idiot about it too. Like, oh, that's so cool, because there have been times in my life, like my house smelled a certain way because of the ingredients we carried, you know, or housed. Like there was rice, lots of rice in storage and dry storage. I mean, there was like food everywhere. There was a lot of like Costco stuff, but then there was like 15-pound bags of dried anchovies and stuff that created a very pungent, garlicky, you know, smell. And so people would be like, "Oh, what is the smell? What is that?" And it's like, "Oh, it's kimchi," you know. And for a large part of my life, there was such shame behind saying that, because I'm quite literally a Korean American. I'm half Korean, and I'm a half American. And now it's cool because, you know, in part, like it's so popularized, it's polarized, it's universal now. Like how amazing this thing came from this little tiny impoverished country and culture to now, you know, global fame for its flavor and its health benefits. I've eaten bibimbap from white chefs, and it's all up to interpretation now. Like how I have to be grateful, right? To celebrate. It's also brought tremendous wealth and success for the Korean Americans who are now able to share their foods with Americans, other Americans. Other Americans are loving it, you know? So you can't be bitter about it at the end of the day. And I've seen chefs that, you know, are like David Chang, he's calling for the end of labeling, you know, ethnic aisles in the supermarket. And I, you know, that's just, that's, I think, like getting a little too high up on the high horse, because I want to know, you know, like, I wish they'd actually get a little bit more specific and stop just like having the Asian section. But tell me, this is from Thailand and this is from, you know, like get even more geographically in depth and tell me the history. Tell me where it comes from so we can be all educated and appreciate these influences for what they are. Right.
I agree. I actually think that, becoming more specific is more respectful than these generalizations. Because when you get down to some of that micro level, then you start to see how distinctive and unique each of the places are. You know, how, like the whole idea of Asia is a bit insane, right? Because like how similar is Indian food to Korean food to technically Middle Eastern food? That's all Asia.
I think we're striking on something really significant here, because the way that we are informed by our media in general and through our education, like we don't get into specifics enough. Like we don't.
Yeah. Well, and nowhere more so, bringing it back to the
food
protest this week. Well, and no, to the African American community, Africa. The idea of Africa as a place is madness, because that is an entire continent. And my familiarity is more with North Africa, the countries that are closer to the Mediterranean, the Middle East. But I've had the wonderful opportunity to explore a bit of East African cuisine through my work in Oman. And then absolutely phenomenal book. I want to give a shout out to the James Beard International Cookbook Award winner this year was the book is called Ethiopia, and phenomenal. I made this really wonderful pumpkin curry from that book. And at first I was very intimidated, I won't lie, because I've not done much cooking, like Ethiopian cooking. I'm not very familiar with Ethiopian food. I've been out for it a few times. But this author did such a marvelous job of making it really approachable and breaking it down. And part of the fun of it, part of the adventure, was going and tracking down some of the ingredients needed to go into this, what he called the Berber spice mix. And so I ended up in an Ethiopian market over in City Heights, and I bought injera because I don't make any kind of bread. I do not have the mentality for it. So I bought really delicious injera from them, and then these really floral spices that were required for the mix. And then beyond making this spice mix, which was the trickiest part, it's really just taking one of those cute little pumpkins and kind of doing a quick fry with the spices and adding some water. Super simple, and it creates this really luscious, wonderful curry. So, and I highly recommend it. And I feel like cooking foods from these different places, it's such an exciting and accessible way to learn something more about a culture, especially when you have to go out of your way and interact with people from that culture to get it. I was sitting there talking to them about, like, hey, what is this spice? What is, like, one of the things was white caraway. So I was like, I've never, what is this? I've never even heard of it. And the guy pulled out this big bag of it, and I was smelling it, and it's, like, a little bit more floral, and I don't know, it's very interesting, so.
I find that to be true with my experiences cooking Indian cuisine as well. You just like you're discovering new spices. Like, what is that? It's I don't know. Unless you're delving really into these little experiments in your cuisine, you don't learn, right, where they come from. Even with more specificity. Sorry.
So, what about you, Olivia? What have you been cooking this week or eating? Have you been at home or out and about?
I ate this week. Actually, it was literally right before this call, and when I was just making lunch for Shai and I had some cold smoked salmon in the fridge that is almost up to its expiration date. So I was like, I gotta use this. So I also had some avocados in the fridge and thought, okay, I'm going to make an avocado toast. Maria, you actually turned me on to those tiny avocados from, of course, Trader Joe's, because they literally are the perfect amount of avocado.
And are you actually able to find ripe avocados at Trader Joe's? I feel like I've never seen one there. Ever.
They're never ripe when you buy them, but they ripen very nicely on the counter, which, you know, yeah. with avocados, you can't, they actually can't really ship them ripe, right? Because they would just be mush. So they actually, you have to pick avocados not ripe from the tree, so they're hard and can be transported.
If I grab them when they're hard and then let them ripen.
That's what she said.
Out in the room until it's time to go in the fridge. And then, you know, they're good in the fridge for, you silly girls, they're good in the fridge for up to another week.
Well, if you do forget one and they get a little overripe, throw them in the blender when you're making your salad dressing. It makes it so freaking creamy and nice.
That's a great idea. Yes, absolutely.
I remember this practice.
Well, yeah. we were sitting pretty today because I put a full avocado on each of our pieces of toast today.
Awesome.
Oh,
so
wow.
Usually I would split it and I'd have half, you know, and half. But this was like our lunch.
Did you try the everything bagel seasoning trick on it?
I've done that many times in the past. That's like my favorite go-to, especially when I'm using like this cold smoked salmon. And actually today it would have been great on there as well. But what was fun with today's version, again, like really thick layer of avocado, like really nice juice, you know, juicing of lime, fresh lime juice and salt, of course. And then I layered on these cold smoked salmon. And then remember those pickles I described last week, the ones I made with the leftover pickle brine. So I had actually bought another round of cucumbers and made another batch of, I guess I'll call it recycled brine pickles. And I used those, I put those on top with the fish and avocado and then a bit of cilantro. So it was great. Nice. It had that kind of, you know, floral note from the cilantro and that acidity from the lime and pickles. And of course that smokiness from the salmon was like perfect with the avocado. So that was great. It was really satisfying. It's probably like a smaller lunch, but because of the richness and because of like all of the, you know, great flavors together, it was like more satisfying than most things. And I'm feeling really good.
Did
so
you say if you put garlic in the avocado, is that what you did?
I didn't put garlic this time, but something I actually usually do is on the toast, I'll use a fresh clove and I rub it on the toast, you know, when it's still warm. So you get, you know, it basically infuses, that like kind of fresh, but like just slightly cooked, garlic flavor. Mm-hmm. And I didn't do that today, but that's something I actually usually like to do. I love that combination with avocado and garlic together.
That and with salmon is like, oh, brilliant.
Yeah. What about you, Felicia? I know you mentioned you've been doing some copycat cooking.
Some of it has been amazing. I tried to do a Panda Express copycat because, like, I've made some really great Szechuan food recently, like got the more authentic style Chinese. But we were having a craving for junky Americanized like fried beef, and it was okay. I mean, I don't fry, so even like my pan fried version used more oil than I typically do, and boy does it smell bad. I always forget how badly like oil smells when
it does.
You
kind of sticks to everything.
It does. It like creates this fine mist that coats every surface in
your
kitchen.
You have to get a screen. You have to put a screen on it.
Well, maybe that would save us from a lot of things because Methy and I both have third degree burns from some eggplant stews. Because eggplant is like a biological weapon when it gets hot. Mm-hmm. It's bad.
I've never had that experience with eggplant. I always just make Parmigiano with it. That's my favorite.
I think I'm done with copycats for this week. I think this weekend we're going to just do a classic Persian rice dish again to clean out the freezer. It's called lubia pilau, and it's green beans. We just take frozen green beans and a little ground beef, or you can use ground soy crumbles, and you saute it up with onions and turmeric and tomato paste and some hot chili, and then layer it with the rice, and of course make the crispy bottom on the
I love
rice.
that you're reminding me. I have tofu. I have tofu I need to
I
eat.
love tofu.
I
The
love tofu.
key to lobia pilau, the thing that makes it like amazing, is eating it with pickles.
Oh, really? Yeah.
Oh, we love
I
pickles.
mean, we love pickles. What to do? Yeah. So, in fact, this week, oh man, it has been a fridge clean out week for all of us, I think. My lunches this week have been hard boiled eggs and then like spoonfuls of shredded pickled beets. I feel very Russian.
Yeah.
You look extra
I
Russian
look
today.
extra Russian today.
I can, your cheeks are extra rosy with the beets.
Oh yeah, exactly. It's
Maybe
it's good for the
the pink of
blood.
the lips.
Yeah.
Beets are actually, they're very miraculous in that way. I've seen it. I've evidenced it. Like people who have iron deficiencies, there's often other mineral deficiencies that aren't being targeted with that. And so doctors will prescribe beets, and like pregnant women who have iron deficiency eat more beets.
I sometimes
Please.
wonder if
Something
we're
worth
craving
trying.
pickles because we need them.
I think you do. I definitely think you do, because I've used dietary interventions, for certain health treatments for my son and even for myself, and seen miraculous improvements. And what we've retained from that, even though sometimes we've liberalized from some of the rules or the boundaries of you're not supposed to eat this, that, or whatever on it. But I feel like we're naturally inclined to eat more of those things that benefit our health otherwise. Like, so the pickles, because they're really good for digestion and probiotics and whatever all those other things are.
I agree with everything except if it's got refined sugar in it or refined carbohydrate. Because I think that's like the difference between craving and addiction,
Oh, absolutely
you
agree.
know?
And that's why that is probably still a facet of my diet from time to time, because and I resolve to it like it's not a prominent fixture in my life. It's fun to be able to explore that every once in a while and enjoy it for what it is. Like, if you think of,
Carbs, you mean?
yeah,
Are we
carbs,
talking
all
about
the
carbs?
food, refined
Yes,
sugars, like
agree.
all the food, no matter how bad or carcinogenic it may be. Like, if there's an opportunity to try it, I'm going to eat it.
What's your favorite at home kind of guilty-ish pleasure, Olivia?
I can only really think of pizza. After our conversation last week, I went back to Trader Joe's and I picked up another round of those crusts that I was telling you about and had a pizza party again. And I was like, we're only going to do one of the crusts, Shy, like just one. I only made one. I literally, when we were done eating, I was like, I'm going to go make the other one. So like,
Yes.
what was great though, was after our conversation, I had kind of all this new information to think about as I was making it. And it was just like, I scaled back on the toppings. And I think there's something to that, because it really, you could taste, everything kind of all together, just the right proportions. And what
Oh,
was
we
kind of,
devolved last weekend when we made
oh, even
ours. Oh,
further,
God.
even
Oh,
further. Yeah.
Methy went full American. I was like, you're an American now. You deserve your passport. Because he just kept chunking it on. He was like, why are you being cheap with the peppers? I'm like, being cheap? What are you talking about? It's gonna fall. But I gotta say, I'm impressed. He's like a natural born pizzaiolo. He,
Oh,
because I was like, you're not gonna be able to get it off the peel. It's too heavy. He did it. He did it.
that's
We
great.
only seared a couple chunks of mozzarella on the stone. But
I'll take it.
well, you're making me want pizza again. I'm committed to making my dough this time, and I can't find
Yeah.
yeast still. So
Oh,
until I
well,
find yeast,
Trader Joe's
Trader
has
Joe's has yeast.
oh my God, Trader Joe's has everything. That's where I found flour the other day. I guess I should have just looked up for the yeast.
They also have these Korean scallion pancakes in the
New podcast title, Hungry Girls at Trader Joe's.
That's
Yeah.
it. That's
This is
it.
that episode. These little pancakes, they fry up nicely. They get real chewy and crispy. Like, you just kind of toss them in the pan and toast them on both sides. Follow the directions. I was like, I very loosely always follow packaged food directions. but they turned out they were lovely, and I'm addicted. It's gonna be a problem. Like if you are what you eat, I might end up being Trader Joe's Korean scallion pancakes.
Oh man, I can't even. I'll eat them
I'm
all.
scared to go
I'm
down that path
afraid.
for you.
Yeah, if
Yeah.
that's in my house, it's
Go.
not gonna be
Just
there
get
long.
one pack at a time. One pack at a time. But
Well, this was great. I can't wait to hear what we get up to next week.
Right. Well, have a great week, guys.
Bye, everybody.
Thank you for listening to Modern Casserole. You can find our show notes at moderncasserole.com with links, photos, and recipes from this week's episode. Subscribe today on our website and everywhere podcasts are available.